Shabbat Shalom again.
Shabbat Shalom.
Chag Sameach to our brethren who will see this with us. And praise Yahweh, we are here in 2016 Shavuot weekend in Jerusalem. And thank Yahweh for each and every person in these chairs that has been blessed to be here and accounted by Yahweh to be in a set apart city during this time. Praise His name. I have some really important messages for tomorrow that I want to give concerning Shavuot. One will be on first fruits and what does that mean, first fruits and first fruit. I'm also going to give a message on the latter rain that I believe is in the process of starting. Praise Yahweh, we'll talk about that. But, you know, our pilgrimage this time, like we said, it's all based on the wilderness. And we were in the wilderness yesterday, the beginning of it, but we were in the wilderness. Tonight, after our dinner is over, we can come upstairs, maybe 6:30 or so, and I'll read you some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, and we'll read about the community. I think you'll really enjoy it, because there's some really neat things about them. But since our theme is on the wilderness today, I'm giving a message. It's called, It's Time to Enter the Wilderness. It's time to enter the wilderness. For several years now, I've been giving messages on the Valley of Decision. You know, we're in that Valley of Decision. It's time to make a choice. We're past the Valley of Decision now. You know, the Valley of Decision is come and gone. It's time to enter the wilderness. You know, Yahweh has given us this Shemitah. And praise Yahweh, everybody here has been talking about the blessings of the Shemitah and what that means. And we feel the same way. This has been the most awesome year in 33 years as a believer, above the top. I can't say it if it is the best year ever. There were good years, but it has to be above the top. This has been such a special time and really time to draw closer to Yahweh. So many lessons that we learned. I am going to put together a whole list of things of Shemitah blessings, not only from us, but I'm hoping for many different people of how Yahweh blessed His people, the Shemitah. But you know, we're in the eye of the storm. And praise Yahweh, I can say, because when the Shemitah started, for the ones that were here at Sukkot, you know, it was a very dangerous time. We had terrorism that was going on here, a lot of things going on in the Temple Mount. And from what I was hearing, they were saying for sure was starting the third Antifada, which some are still calling it third Antifada. I don't know if I can really call it that. That means Arab uprising. And to be honest, praise Yahweh, it didn't turn into so far what it could have. It hasn't been good. People have died. There's been terror attacks, but it could have been much worse. You know, so praise Yahweh for that. But I believe the reason why Yahweh's been holding back is for us. I believe that the Shemitah is not the time of war, you know. The Shemitah is the time that He's giving us for preparation. And He doesn't want us worried about war while we should be worried about sanctification and getting closer to Him. So every day, every week, every month that's going by here, that praise Yahweh, world events are holding steady, that He's blessing us with all our needs, take advantage of it. You know, it's the time that we need to be getting closer to Him. And that's why I say it's time to enter the wilderness. You know, that the wilderness is something I've been teaching on for 20 years at least, maybe even longer. But I really say it's time to enter the wilderness. 1 Corinthians 10 in verse 1 says, "And I do not want you to be ignorant, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea." Can you imagine? We've been down there at the Red Sea crossing site. And can you imagine those waters being opened and walking into those waters and that cloud covering? And this is what Paul is saying, that it was a form of baptism, right? A form of Yahweh's Spirit coming down as they're walking on walls congealed of water on one side and the other side. Just amazing going on there. "And all were baptized to Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food," right? The same as today. They all had physical manna, and we are all having spiritual manna, you know? Spiritual manna. We had last year at the school, last fall, where we were blessed. We were out one day, and we found a stalk of bananas. I don't know if it was 50 to 100 bananas on that stalk. I think of when they plucked the grapes, you know, with a pole. But we carried the bananas back to the camp. That was Yahweh's blessing that was laying out there, gleaned in the field. And we called it banana manna. Banana manna, right? Many times that's happened to us. Yahweh brought the banana manna, which is always good. Anything that Yahweh is going to provide for us is good. I'll tell you, not that long ago, a week or two, we found, I think it was 4, maybe 5 nectarines in the street that were half rotten and laying there in a hot street. Now, normally, any time, I would never go near that. You know, it's like, Mariah, walk on the other side of the street. There could be rotten nectarines there. We were like, wow, rotten nectarines, grab them. We took them, and about a third of them were rotten, and the rest of them to have fresh fruit that Yahweh blessed us with that day to glean from was unbelievably awesome. And that's changed our mindset, how we're looking at things, that we're becoming like those Essenes, that nothing goes to waste. Remember the parable of the miracle of the bread and the fish? And what did Yeshua say? Don't gather up what's left that nothing is lost. And there were 12 baskets gathered for the 12 tribes. So that's what Yahweh is doing today. He doesn't want anybody to be lost. He wants everyone to be involved in it. This is the Shemitah. This is the year of release. And remember what comes after the seventh Shemitah, the Jubilee. Now this one isn't the Jubilee, I don't think. It doesn't seem to be, you know. But one will, maybe the next Shemitah. But one Shemitah very soon, the next one, or maybe the one after that, but very soon, it will be where, as we ending the Shemitah, we're going to be so happy because the Jubilee is coming. And that means Yeshua is here. So how excited do you get during the Shemitah? Because you can't have the Kingsman Redeemer without the Shemitah. You have to have the seventh year Shemitah before you have the Jubilee. So now we can practice it. Even though this one isn't it, we can practice and get ready. That one Shemitah very soon, we'll be ready for that. And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they all drank of the spiritual rock falling, and that rock was Messiah. Praise Yahweh. Yet Elohim was not pleased with most of them, for they were scattered in the deserted place. So, again, a very, very sober example, as we read in Jude last night. They estimate 2.8 or 2.6 million people leaving Egypt, something like that. You know, some say less, some say more, but it's a lot. It's a lot of people from hundreds of thousands to a couple of million. But one thing is for sure, the scary part is out of all those people that saw the miracles of Yahweh, that saw the death of the firstborn, that saw the parting of the Red Sea, only two entered the promised land. That was 20 and above. Only two. And like I say, my mind, I'm not that smart with a lot of things, but Yahweh's blessed me with mathematics. My mind is mathematics, and I always work with odds and probability. And when I look at that, I say, I don't like those odds. 2 out of 2 million, I don't like those odds. They're not very good odds. And it's there to encourage us to say, you know, we can't take our calling for granted. Because Yahweh doesn't have to give us salvation. He doesn't have to bless it. This is His free gift. So we want to make sure we take it serious. But these things became examples for us, that we may not be lusting after evil, even as those indeed lusted. Neither be idolaters as some of them, as it has been written. The people sat down to eat and drink and rose to play. Nor should we commit fornication as some of them fornicated. And 23,000 fell in one day. Neither let us tempt the Messiah as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents. We're going to read that a little later. Neither should you murmur as some of them murmured and perished by the hand of the destroyer. Years ago, when I was still living in Babylon, you know, we would be there, and the people used to joke there in America. And, you know, they could complain about anything. Complain about the air conditioning. It's too hot, it's too cold, it's this, it's that. And they giggle. They say, hey, I guess we're Israelites. I say, wow, that's not something to laugh about. You know, remember, only two entered the promised land. I don't want to laugh about that. If I'm an Israelite and I'm doing these things, this is why it's an example. I want to change. I don't want to be like them anymore. I want to learn from the examples, and I want to change. And all these things happened to those examples, as it was written for our warning, on whom the ends of the ages have come. So not to take away for the last 2,000 years of the apostles, and the Paulicians, and the Waldenses, and the Ensabbatai, you know, and all the other groups that went through the wilderness, because I'm sure they learned from this. But this is written for us. He says it's written for the last generation. You know why? Because more people will perish in this generation than ever before. And that's why we have these examples, because these are the very things that can keep us out of the kingdom. And that's why He wants us to learn from these things, and that's why you got to enter the wilderness. You got to enter the wilderness. If you're not in the wilderness, you're never going to learn the lessons. So that he that thinks he can stand, let him be careful that he fall. Right? The Laodicean, rich, increase with goods, in need of nothing. He who thinks he stand, take heed lest he fall. We want to make sure we're looking at each and everything, because I'll tell you something. Sometimes a sermon can be given, and let's say it's a sermon on gossip. And you really never gossip, you know? So somebody who's gossiping may be pricked to the heart from that sermon, and they grow in grace. But I don't look at it that way. I look at every sermon, and I say, okay, you know, I don't gossip, but maybe I do 2% of the time, or 1%, or maybe I did years ago once, that every sermon is for me. It doesn't matter if it's my primary problem or not. Every sermon is for me because I can grow for it. And you know what? So maybe it's not gossip, but let me hear his words and maybe I need to apply these words to something else. Right? So every single thing that we're getting for encouragement, for lesson, some way we can put in our life if we look toward it. Right? We have to have eyes to see and ears to hear. You know, it can't be like, okay, that's not my problem. You know, let's fast forward to the next message. No, we learn from every message because these are things that can put us in the kingdom or take us out of the kingdom. So anything that's said, there's something for me to learn from it. Luke 14 and verse 16. Because you know something? There's one thing that amazes me more than anything, and I've said this before, that every single person born knows one thing. They know that they're going to die. There's nobody on the earth today that was there in the Garden of Eden that is still living for the last almost 6,000 years. There's nobody living for 3,000 years. There's nobody even living for 150 years. So one thing we all know is, we all know good, bad, or indifferent, we're born, and there's a time where we're going to die. And what amazes me is, you would think, because I started doing this at around maybe 8 years old, I started wondering, why am I here? What is my purpose in life? You know, if what mommy and daddy is really telling me about this creator, why did he make me? And what does he have to do with me? And I don't know, just as a child, I started asking those questions. But as I look at life, hardly anybody asks those questions. And you would think that would be the most basic question to every human being. What is your purpose in life? How could people just go through life and see the people they love die and see all these things happen and not wonder what is the purpose? And now, right, we're the last generation where Yahweh clearly tells us 6 days of creation, the seventh day is the Sabbath, 6,000 years I'm giving to Satan from the Garden of Eden, and after the sixth millennium, I'm coming back and I'm going to restore all things. So no, we don't know whether that is 5 years away, 8 years away, 10 years away, 15 years away, or maybe 20 years away. We don't know, but we know it's close. We know he clearly told us in his word what to look for the beginning of the last generation, Israel, the fig tree, right? So any way we look at it, we know we're far into that. We know it's not 100 years, and we know it's not even 50 years. So the years, it doesn't matter. What matters is we're at the very end of this nightmare of Satan's rule over this earth. And Yeshua is in heaven right now preparing his cherubs and his for his rule and authority on this earth. And he's chosen you out of maybe a million people out there and said, I want you to work with me. I want you to be part of it. And you're like, well, how can I? I can't do this like Moses. Moses stuttered. How can I go? And what did Yahweh say? It's not you. It's not you. Isn't it me who puts speech in a man or takes the speech out? It's not me. I'll give you the gifts of what you need to do it. But one in every one of us, the main thing in our life now, it's so short time that, man, there is nothing more important in my life than using what he's given me so that when he comes back, he'll hug me and say, good job, faithful servant. I don't want to run up to him and say, Yeshua, Yeshua, and him saying, who's he? I don't know you. But yet we know. Many will come to me and say, Master, Master, I'll say, I never knew you. Depart from me. And they'll be cast in a lake of fire. So that's why I say, the time is over. It's time to enter the wilderness. It's time to enter the wilderness. The invitations are there because Yahweh gave us his spirit. And Yahweh's spirit is not barren on anybody. And he's called us for a purpose. And the purpose isn't for me. The purpose is for me to give back what he's given to me to others. That's what the purpose of life is. So let's read in Luke 14 and verse 16. Luke 14 and verse 16. But he said, a certain man made a great supper and invited many. And he sent his slave at the supper hour to say to those who had been invited, come, for all now is ready. And with one mind began to beg off. And the first said to him, I have bought a field, and I need to go out and see it. I ask you, have me excused. And another said, I bought 5 yoke of oxen. I am going to try them out. I ask you, have me excused. And another said, I married a wife, and for this reason I'm not able to come. And having come up, that slave reported these things to the master. Could you imagine? This is happening in heaven right now. Yahweh called how many of us on this earth, and there's cherubs that says, comes back and forth and report everything to him. And in heaven, this day, you know, cherubs are coming back and saying, Heavenly Father, I got some bad news. You called this person here, you gave him a spirit, you gave these gifts, but he's doing this, or he's doing that. Or he loves father and mother, or he loves his job, or he loves money, or loves whatever more than you. And does that make Yahweh very happy? No, it makes him really sad. Because like I said, the great part about Yahweh is he sees things we don't see. You know, we see things as we see it. If you see an evil person, you stay away from him, he's evil. But all of us were evil at one point. And while we were sinners, he saw something in us that he didn't just quit on us. He saw something in us that was redeemable. And he said, I know this guy has problems, but I like his heart. You know, King David had a lot of problems, but he was a man after Yahweh's own heart. So he sees something in us that we're sitting in these chairs and not the other 999,000 people that aren't sitting in these chairs. And how does it make him feel when these cherubs are coming up and saying, they got your invitation and they don't want to come. They have other things in their life. You know, and like I said, if it was 1884 in Little House on the Prairie, maybe I could understand it, because it was a pretty good world. There was hard workers, don't get me wrong, but I would have loved to live there in Walnut Grove and had good friends and go out and make my wheat. It is not Little House on the Prairie. it's like whatever. It's the total opposite. It's the world of demonic forces that we're living in. We're living in the worst time the world has ever known. So for a true believer with the Spirit of Yahweh, it's not that hard to leave the world. You know, and again, I'm not saying quit your job and run to the mountaintops. I'm saying go to the wilderness. And the first thing going to the wilderness is a mental capability. You know, when Yeshua said, unless you forsake everything, you could not be my disciple. If you look that word up, it doesn't mean in a literal sense, although it could be. It means in a mental sense. Because face it, if all of us gave up everything, we would all become dependent on people. That wouldn't be Yahweh's will. Then none of us, we'd all be, it would be like a welfare state. That's not the way Yahweh works. But what he's saying is, everything belongs to him. Psalm 24, the earth is Yahweh's and the fullness thereof, the people and those who dwell in it. And since everything belongs to him, nothing you own, not your bank account, not your car, not your clothes, nothing is yours, it's his. So if he blessed you with it, praise Yahweh. That's a good thing. Don't feel guilty, he blessed you with it. But use it for the kingdom. Use everything he's given you for the kingdom. And today I need my car, so I'm going to keep it because I'm helping and I'm doing ministry. But you know what? Maybe in a year from now, I don't need the car and I give it to somebody else. Or sell it and use the money for something else for his kingdom. We got to get the kingdom mentality. You have to live in that mentality. That everything has to be for the kingdom. The way Yeshua was. You know, he came to give life more abundantly. So we don't have to be monks and put chains on us. He wants us to enjoy life. He wants us to thank him for his blessings. But he also wants us to help others and give back to him. So this is what's happening, though. These people are not coming. They're not coming. And having come up to that slave, reported these things to the master. Then being angry, the housemaster said to his slave, go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city and bring in here the poor and the maimed, the lamed and the blind ones. And the slave said, sir, it's been done as you ordered and still there is room. Wow. What does that tell you? If even all the believers that aren't coming are getting pushed out, and he's going this all out and getting people, and still there's room. Many are called, few are chosen. You know, we're living in a time where it's getting hard for Yahweh to find a person. And the master said to the slave, go out into the highways and hedges and compel them to come in so that my house may be filled. For I say to you that not one of those men who have been invited shall taste of my supper. Not one of those that were called and chosen and given a spirit and put gifts in them. And they only used it for selfish reasons for themselves or didn't use it at all. The parable of the talents. You know, we can't hide it in the napkin. We have to use it to produce fruit for the kingdom, or he's going to come back and he's going to take it away. And great crowds came together to him, and turning he said to them, if anyone comes to me and does not love less than me, his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brothers and sisters, and besides even his own life, he cannot be not my disciple. How many people here are disciples of Yeshua? No, I am. You want to know, in Scripture, people ask me all the time, what do you call yourself? We don't call ourselves Christian. We don't. And I say, well, in Scripture, believer is like four times, you know. What's the other word they use a couple of times? Faithful one, the called one. But the one that's used most of the time, 250 times, is disciple. 250 times, we're called disciples. And disciple means one who is disciplined, you know, one who is disciplined. So I want to be a disciple, right? Yeah, let me in on it. He's giving us the parameters. You can't say you're a disciple of Yeshua and not follow the parameters of the disciple. You know, so this is what he's telling us. Whoever loves father, mother, sister, brother, children, wives, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his torture stake and come after me, he cannot be my disciple. Coming out of the waters of baptism, we're not going to be perfect. You're still 99% carnal, 1% spirit, and how much you yield to that spirit is how fast you grow. But whatever our stake is, to one it could be blindness, to one he could be crippled, to one it could be living in a third world country, to one it could be something else. Whatever our torture stake is, we have to carry it every day. For who of you desiring to build a tower does not first sit down and count the cost? Whether he has the things to finish, right? Plan of action. Like we always talk about, you have to have a plan of action. That having laid a foundation and not having strength to finish, all those seeing begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and did not have strength to finish. Or what king going to attack another king in war does not first sit down and take counsel whether he is able with 10,000 to meet those coming to him with 20,000? But if not, he being still far off, sending a delegation, he asks the things for peace. So then every one of you who does not forsake all his possessions is not able to be my disciple. And that's why I said, it means to literally, mentally, to say nothing belongs to me. And the Apostle Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians 7. He says that we are to be using without possessing. Nothing wrong with using. You got to use, you know. Some of it for the kingdom, right? But you have to use without possessing. You can't have this mindset of mine, of possessing. Salt is good, but if salt becomes bland, with what will it be salted? It is not fit for soil nor for manure. They throw it out. The one having ears to hear, let him hear. Like I said, time to enter the wilderness. Yahweh has to lead us to our next wilderness stop. We have to be totally reliant on Yahweh. Totally reliant. Ezekiel 20. Ezekiel 20. In verse 33, end time scripture, we see. As I live, says Adonai Yahweh, surely with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm and with fury poured out, I will reign over you. Wow, I wish it didn't have to be that way. I don't want it with an outstretched arm and fury poured out. I want to say, yes, Master, on my hands and knees. Of course we want him to reign over us. But it's not going to be that way totally in the end. There will be rebels. There will be goats among the sheep, because he says when he comes, he's going to separate them, and we don't want to be a goat. And I will bring you out from the people and gather you from the lands in which you were scattered among them, with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm and with fury poured out. And I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and I will be judging with you there face to face. Wow, we'll see him, right? Now we see through a glass half darkened, and that day face to face. Seeing him, how blessed that will be if we're counted to be there. Just as I was judging your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, right? Everything is for example. So I will be judging you, declares Adonai Yahweh. And I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. Like I said in sheep and goats, the good shepherd, every night when the sheep would come, he had his rod, right? His shepherd's staff, and one by one the sheep would come, and he would check them. He makes sure that there's no ticks. He makes sure that there's no bites on them. He makes sure he's checking every single one to make sure that they're comfortable so that they can have peace. And that's the way Yahweh is with our life. Why does he say, do not let the sun go down on your wrath? Because he wants us to sleep every night with peace in our souls. He loves us that much. He cares for us that much. He knows how many hairs are on our head. And believe me, I'm keeping him busy these days. Because I'm losing them daily, so I'm keeping him busy, but he still knows. He knows everything about us. And I will purge from among you the rebels and the transgressors against me. And I will bring them out of the land where they reside, but they will not enter the land of Israel. And you will know that I am Yahweh. That's how blessed you are to be here, right? Because he says, you didn't choose to be here, Yahweh chose you. And you're here representing him because he chose to have you here. And you, O house of Israel, so says Adonai Yahweh, every man go serve his idols, even hereafter. If you will not listen to me, but you will not still profane my holy name with your gifts and your idols. For in my holy mountain, Mount Zion, in the mountain height of Israel, declares Adonai Yahweh, the house of Israel will serve me there, all of them, in the land. There I will accept them, and there I will seek your heave offerings and the first fruits of your offerings with all your holy things. So, wow. Here's Yahweh saying, and here we are, the Feast of First Fruits. You know, we're seeing these scriptures come to fruition. Numbers 20, because you know something? When you enter the wilderness can be a lonely place. And like I say, there's a spiritual wilderness before the physical wilderness. Praise Yahweh. Some of the people in our congregation, we started kibbutz, and they're really getting in the wilderness. They're living communal living, and it's working, and it's beautiful. And they're just like the community down at Qumran. For most of the other brethren, we're just starting it, you know. But you have to enter the wilderness if you're ever going to be in a kibbutz. And again, the wilderness can be a lonely place, but not if you have Yahweh. And I'll tell you something. When we left the States, we went somewhere around, maybe at least 3-4 years, maybe even a little longer, where we had virtually no fellowship whatsoever. None. Except for feast time. And I remember when the feast was coming, and I'd be all excited, and I'd be seeing somebody, and I'd tell them, you know, and they'd say, why are you so happy? I'd say, my brothers and sisters are coming. You know, they're coming, because all year long, you know what I'm doing? 365 days a year, practically, here in Israel? I'm fighting these Sunday pastors, I'm fighting these Messianic pastors all day long when I'm working in that bookshop. And I told them right off the bat, when it started, I said, look, if you're offended at this, and I'm losing your business, we don't have to volunteer here. And they said no, and they said we like it. And a matter of fact, most of them in the bookstore were Messianic Jews that were like Christians, keeping Sunday, not keeping the feast, and they all turned. You know, they all turned when they heard the message, and I got invited to many of those Messianic congregations through the work that we were doing in those days. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, and you don't know how many times I pray to Yahweh going home and say, Father, what do you have me here for? You know, I mean, I don't mind it if this is your will, but wow, there's nobody here that seems to be interested in the truth. And then all of a sudden, he started building up the feast. The first one we did, we had like 5 people. Where were we? In the wilderness. We were down at En Gedi tenting. We weren't even in Jerusalem. I didn't even realize that at that point. We were down there, and when I said to somebody, because we actually had a big group that was supposed to be up in the north near Galilee, and that's when 9-1-1 happened. That was the first year we hosted the feast here. It was in 2001. And people asked me, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, we're having the feast. You know, oh, somebody's doing that already. You know, well, Yahweh has a different idea, because we're not here for playing. We're here because we believe it's a commandment. We're here to appear before him. We're here to accept the blessing. So, again, in those days, though, was when I did so much, when I wrote many of my books, a lot of, almost everything Yahweh told me on the covenants, everything. I didn't read that somewhere. I got it from his word, from being with him in the wilderness, from having days. Petra can tell you, there were days that we'd be up at 5 in the morning, and we would be going 7, 8, 9, 10 straight hours of just Bible study. Had nothing else to do. And then we go out, we go to the streets, and we'd look for a homeless person, or look for a woman that needed her bags carried, anything. Because we didn't have a lot of work in those days. But praise Yahweh for that wilderness. And I say, if your relationship with Yahweh is good, you don't need anything else. So I appreciate having congregation. I appreciate having brethren. But wow, the wilderness isn't so bad. You know, you got Yahweh. If you have Yahweh and Yeshua, you have everything you need. Because a human being could never fill a void of loneliness. Only Yahweh can. You know? A husband, a wife, yeah, they can help in certain ways, but they can never fill a void of loneliness. A friend can be a friend to a certain degree. But real fulfillment in your soul can only come from your relationship with Yahweh and Yeshua. And the relationships with your husbands, your wives, your brothers, your sisters, your friends, they're all an extension of your relationship with Yahweh and Yeshua. So if your relationship with Yahweh and Yeshua isn't right, you'll never feel completed. That's where it's got to start from. So in Numbers 20, he says, and the sons of Israel, even the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month. And the people remained in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Kadesh is in Aqaba in Jordan. We were there. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered against Moses and against Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "Oh, that we had died when our brothers died before Yahweh. And why have you brought the assembly of Yahweh to this wilderness to die here, we and our animals? And why have you brought us up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place?" Wow, can you imagine what they're saying? "Not a place of seed, nor fig, nor vine, or pomegranate. And there is no water to drink." You're going to find this out Monday when we get down there. You won't see a lot of these plants in the wilderness. You're going to see other plants, though. And Moses and Aaron went in from the eyes of the assembly to the door of the tent of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of Yahweh appeared to them. Wow. That's all we need is the glory of Yahweh. You know? Better is a little in the house of the righteous than much in the house of the wicked. You know, so I've seen people even compromise and say, "Well, we're going to Sunday church because my children need fellowship with other children." You don't need that fellowship, you know. I mean, we watch our daughter, we sanctify our daughter, and we're not going to put our daughter in situations where she's going to be manipulated by other people. You know, public school system, terrible, terrible. Put your children in public school system if you want to lose them. Because it's not the responsibility of the public school from Yahweh to raise your children. It's your responsibility to raise your children. That's why Yahweh gave them to you. You know? So it's very, very simple. It's better to be alone in the wilderness than be in the congregation of the unrighteous. I would have much rather, if I lived in that day, to be off on the side, if Yahweh was with me, to be with 2 million rebels that are fighting against the leadership, that are fighting against Moses. You know, because iron sharpens iron, but also the rebellious spirit can grow really quick too. So that's a lesson that we learn, that the wilderness is there to sanctify you. It's there to sanctify you. That's what the spiritual wilderness, before you can get to a kibbutz, before you can get to wherever Yahweh's going to have his people, you know, out there, where there's no air conditioning, where there's no heat, where there's no refrigerators, where there's no indoor toilets, where there's no water, where there's no food, where sand is blowing in your face day after day after day after day. Before you can get to that point, you've got to get in the spiritual wilderness. You have to sanctify yourself. You have to get your mind cleared, because you'd never last there a day. You wouldn't. If you're used to that kind of lifestyle, you will never last a day in the real wilderness. So you have to, that's why I say it's time to enter the wilderness. Not time to go out here, you know, and live somewhere out here in the desert. For some, it's that time already. And that's why I say, if you don't enter at least the spiritual wilderness now, you are in trouble. Because now Yahweh is already transforming the ones ready from the spiritual wilderness to the real wilderness. It's already started. I'm talking about it for years, but now it's starting. Now physically people are moving to the wilderness. And it's working. It's working. They're united. They follow the leadership. They believe in the doctrines. They're all one. And it's a beautiful thing to see. It's a beautiful thing to see. So if we've been lagging, Yahweh is merciful. But it's time to enter the wilderness. We have to at least start getting in the spiritual wilderness. You have to start sanctifying your life away from the world. For some, it's harder than the others. If you have unconverted relatives, it doesn't mean you're going to move your bedroom down to the basement, you know, and tell your relatives, I'll see you once a year. You know, and so everybody's life is different, but you have to sanctify your life where you can. You know, I'll be honest with you. I believe, he who doesn't work doesn't eat, and I know people have to still work. I'm not telling everybody to quit their jobs, but I'm saying where you don't have to work, don't work in the world. Yeah. Don't work in the world. You're wasting your time. The time is short. Yeah. We got to get ourselves ready. We have to get ready for Yahweh. There's things he has us to do, and you can't be in two places at one time. So if you're out here wasting your time doing something that has no meaning, that's not going to even be in the kingdom in a couple of years, Yahweh can't use you somewhere else. I'm not saying sit in your house and do nothing. I'm saying it's time to work for Yahweh. Not everybody can do that. There's people that have to work. There's people that are providing for their family. And there's people that are working good jobs. You know, there's doctors. I'm not going to tell a doctor to quit his job. He's saving life. If somebody is doing something good, but pray about it. Think about your job. Is it something that's glorifying Yahweh? Is it something that will be used when Yahweh returns? Or is there something that we're so close that I could be using my time better for? Friends you have. It's time to get rid of all those friends that are just tearing you down. And that's in the congregation and out of the congregation. Hey, I hate to have to say that, but there's wheat among tares, and Yahweh is separating the wheat from the tares, not me. But he is clearly showing the wheat from the tares. And it's time to sanctify your life because the time is getting short. It's time to be praying about every relationship. It's time to be using your time wisely. Television, internet, all these things. It's time to get rid of everything that is not bringing you one step forward to the kingdom of Yahweh. And that's the spiritual wilderness. That's where it starts. You know, like I say, if you need to lose 100 pounds, you have to lose one before you can lose 100. So before you can get out there and be living out there in the wilderness where scorpions, you know, are at your feet, you have to start somewhere. You know, even if it's the smallest thing, you know, hey, I really don't need that bowling club on Thursday night. I've been wanting to get out of that for years. Great start. It's not a matter of judgment. It's a matter of encouragement. To look in your life, to look to see what's there. Make a list of things you're doing. I do this at the school. I have the people, when they come, make a list of everything they do during a day. From the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And then they come the next week and they read it. Get up 7 o'clock, drink my coffee, read my Bible for 20 minutes. I drive an hour to work. I work for 9 hours. I come home, you know, watch television for a half an hour, look at the news, you know, talk to my wife, and I go to bed. And I say, you know, the Bible says our life is bought and paid for. Do you believe that? Do you believe? Now, as a Westerner, if you're a Westerner like me, that's a hard concept because I've never been a slave. For some of our brethren, maybe in Africa and Asia, that have worked like slaves, they can understand that. But when he says your life is bought and paid for, that means your life is bought and paid for. It does not belong to you anymore. So now when the master comes, right, and he says this in Luke, when the master comes and you've been working in the field all day, does he say sit down and eat? Or does he say get my dinner and you eat after me? Who's the master and who's a slave? And that's why he asked the students, are you a master or are you a slave? Because if you're a slave, then you're going to follow your master. And your master doesn't have you going out and surfing and swimming and all these other things. Your master has you working for him. Yeshua ain't playing games. He's purifying his congregation now. And the time is getting short. But he loves each and every one of us. And he wants us. He wants us to understand this. And he wants us to enter the wilderness. He wants us to enter the wilderness. And the first thing you have to do, you have to sanctify your life. So make a list of everything. And then see, if you're a slave, right? Because how many hours does a slave give his master a day? 24. Whatever your master says. If you're a slave and it's 2 in the morning and your master wants cocoa, you're going to get up and go make him cocoa. You're the slave. He's the master. You know? But that's not a concept to us. Our concept, we think slavery is something bad, right? Slavery is a good thing. Because everybody is a slave to something. Nobody's a master. I'm not Elohim. I didn't create the air. I don't have my own breath. What we have is free will. And I can choose. Do I serve Yahweh or do I serve Satan in the world? He gives me that choice. But I'm not a master. I'm a slave, one way or the other. I just get to choose who I'll serve. So there is a commitment to serving. And we just read it. Unless you give up everything and you serve me and be my bond servant, you're not worthy to be my slave. And I'm not giving you cute analogies. I'm giving you a reality that very soon, 2 Corinthians 5:10, every person will be before the judgment throne of Messiah, good or bad, and give account of the things done. Every one of us. And we'll either be rewarded for being faithful, or we're going to get punishment for not. That's a reality. That's a reality. Yeshua comes. He separates the sheep and the goats. And that's why, since we're getting close, I'm encouraging you today. I'm encouraging you. It's time to enter the wilderness. Get a plan of action. Look at your life. Write down what you do every day. You know, it's between you and Yahweh. No one's going to look at it. Because everybody's life is different. I'm just here to help you, to encourage you to move to that next step in your calling. And that's the blessing that Yahweh has for us. 1 John 2 and verse 15. 1 John 2 and verse 15. Love not the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, then the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, it's not of the Father, but of the world. And the world is passing away in its lust, but the one doing the will of Yahweh abides forever. I'm 33 years in this walk, and you want to know something? The kingdom of Yahweh is closer today than it was 33 years ago. And it's closer today than it was yesterday. And every day that we go to bed and every day we wake up is one day closer. And like I said, we don't have another 3,000 years or 1,000 years or 500 years or even 100 years. We have a few short years that are going to go by in a blip. But when the kingdom of Yahweh comes, it is an eternal kingdom that will never look back. that will never look back. So do we want to live for the now, or do we want to live for that kingdom? And Yahweh hates this world. There is nothing in this world that is of Yahweh. And that's why whatever we're doing, you know, let's do something that will be part of the solution, not something that's part of the problem. The world is passing away, but the one doing the will of Yahweh abides forever. Little children, it is a last hour. And as you heard that the anti-Messiah is coming, you better believe he's on his way. Even now, many anti-Messiahs have risen up, from which you know it's a last hour. What does anti-Messiah mean? It means in the place of Messiah, right? You have it everywhere you look. All of these heresies. How many people believing Yeshua never pre-existed, that Yeshua is not Elohim? All of these heresies, you know? The lunar Sabbath, it goes on and on and on, and even sick things that I wouldn't even mention that people are believing. So there's enough anti-Messiahs out there already, but the big one is on its way. And like he says, that's how we know it's the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not of us. For if they were of us, they would have remained with us. But they left so they might reveal that they are not of us. Who were the only people that left in the Qumran community? The ones that weren't Ikat. The ones that weren't Ikat. Qumran wasn't about a disciplinarian up front with a stick, and if you didn't do something right, he slapped your hand, and you better listen, or you're going to get thrown out. It was nothing like that. It was 450 people that all had one mind and one purpose, and they all wanted it. They all believed in it with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength. And that's what's happening in the Congregation of Yahweh Jerusalem these days. I'm so honored, because I know the brethren are farther than I am, you know? But I'm honored to go to these places and see these people living it out. It encourages me to see them really living in community. Like I said, I'm in the Philippines. It's 3:30 in the morning. And I'm wondering, I'm hearing this music, and the neighbor, I'm thinking, is playing karaoke. And 3:30 in the morning, all the brethren are out there praising Yahweh and hugging each other and singing. And I told one of the sisters, I said, wow, this is really beautiful. This is judicial order. And she said, but it didn't just happen. It's because all of us are surrendering to Yahweh. That's what it's got to be. That's the only way that it works. And the ones that don't want to be part of that, they're going to leave. It's that simple. Because, like I say, there's no such thing as darkness. Darkness is simply the absence of light. Right? In the kingdom, there'll be no sun and there'll be no moon because Yahweh is there and Yahweh is only light. So darkness is simply the absence of light. And when light is getting brighter, and the light of Yahweh's Spirit is getting brighter in His congregation, darkness can't stand it. And people that have been lying, that are living double lives, that are stealing, that are whatever problem they're having, they're going to leave. They can't stay in the light, because the light can't stay in the darkness. The darkness can't stay in the light. So it's a very sad thing, but it's a reality. Numbers 9 and verse 15. The second reason we need the wilderness is to get complete reliance on Yahweh. Numbers 9 and verse 15. Every single thing in our life, you know, Yahweh is a Father who is real and living and loves us with all His heart. And He doesn't want us just coming to Him in time of crisis. He doesn't want us just looking at Him when the crisis comes and then praying for it. He wants us to talk to Him. Praying is simply talking to the Father. He wants to hear us all day long. He wants to hear how we're feeling. He wants us to tell Him, wow, that bird looks beautiful. Thank you, Father, for making that bird. He wants to hear our family singing. He wants to hear everything in our life. He wants to know the good. He wants to know the bad. He wants to hear everything from us because He's a dad that loves us. He loves us with all His heart. And that's what we got to get in the wilderness. I say that, you know, until I left America, Yahweh blessed me in America. I had my own business. We had a home. And I never realized how much I was limiting Yahweh to bless me because I never had to pray for anything, you know? And I just thought, I don't want to bother Him, you know? I don't need anything. You know, I want to buy something, I buy it. You know, I need something, I go out. I'm sick, I go to, you know, get healed. I don't want to bother Yahweh. And then we leave the States and Yahweh wipes everything out from us. And now I realize I have no faith. I left Babylon. I thought I left because of my faith, and then He showed me I had no faith. And I was scared to death, and I had no choice but to put my faith in Him. There was no other choice. I certainly wasn't going back to Babylon. That wasn't even a thought. And that's when I really realized how much, you know, and I was already a believer for, how many years? More than 15 years around, and I realized, wow, I was the Laodicean. I thought I was rich and increased with goods and needed nothing. I thought I had all this faith, and I left and I found out I had no faith whatsoever. But yet I knew Yahweh had faith. And that's what made me realize, okay, I only got one choice. I can't do it, so Father, I am going to trust in you. I know you're there. I have no doubt about that. And all I have to do is believe that you're going to take care of it. And whatever comes of it, I'm good with it. You know, whatever it is, because you don't owe me nothing. You know, I owe you everything. You saved my life. You owe me nothing. But whatever comes out of this, I will be good with it. And wow, wow, did my life change then. And wow, did he bless me. And that's when I realized that I wasn't allowing him to bless me because I was blessing myself. We have to get Yahweh involved in everything in our life. He wants to be involved. Everything that happens, you have to look for his purpose in that. You have to look for his reason in that. Numbers 9 and verse 15. And on that day the tabernacle was reared up, and the cloud covered the tabernacle, even the tabernacle of the testimony. And at the evening there was on the tabernacle the appearance of fire until morning. Can you imagine that, how that must have been? The fire of Yahweh. So it was always the cloud covered and the appearance of fire by night. And whenever the cloud was taken up over the tabernacle, then after the sons of Israel pulled up stakes, and in the place where the cloud abode, there the sons of Israel encamped. By the mouth of Yahweh the sons of Israel pulled up stakes, and by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped. All the days that the cloud remained over the tabernacle, they remained in the camp. And when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle many days, then the sons of Israel kept the charge of Yahweh and did not pull up stakes. And when the cloud was over the tabernacle many days, by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. And so when the cloud was there from evening until morning, when the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they pulled up stakes. Whether by day or by night, when the cloud was taken up, then they pulled up stake. Whether 2 months or a month, or 2 days or a month or days, when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle to remain over it, the sons of Israel remained in the camp and did not pull up stakes. And when it was lifted up, they pulled up stakes. By the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. They kept the charge of Yahweh by the mouth of Yahweh, by the hand of Moses. So there is a major lesson in here, right? Because in our life, what do we want? We want stability, right? That's what I want. That's what I always wanted, was stability. You want stability in your life, and stability in itself is not a bad goal. But what does Yahweh say? He wants our stability to be in him. He wants our total trust to be in him. So now you're out here in the wilderness, right? And all of a sudden, think of 2 million people. And they're walking for days, walking for days. Woo, the clouds stop. Whew. Thank you, Yahweh. And now they take a week and they're putting up the tabernacle and they're putting up their tents and everything is up. And there goes the cloud. Okay, pull it out. Come on. But why is it? Sometimes it would be a year. Sometimes you didn't know. And the point why Yahweh, it wasn't that he was trying to play a game on them, you know, get them to put it up that we could take it down. Sometimes it could be 1 year, 2 years. The point of it why Yahweh didn't tell them was so that they couldn't build a life in the wilderness. The wilderness wasn't the last stop. The same way as Babylon ain't the last stop. I've had people tell me in Babylon they'd never come and visit here. I'll see it when the kingdom comes. I say, don't be too sure. Don't be too sure. You know, Babylon is not the kingdom. Babylon is a facade, right? So we want to make sure that we're moving when the cloud is moving. You have to do it in your life. And the reason, like I said, the reason why Yahweh did not tell them whether it would be a day or 2 days or a month, they just had to watch the cloud, was he didn't want them building a life in the wilderness the same way he doesn't want us building a life in this world. And that's why he says, you can use without possessing. You can use without possessing. He wants us to have life abundantly, but he doesn't want us to build a foundation in Satan's society, right? Like Abraham. What did Abraham get? Abraham walked around this land for a long time. His bones are over here in Hebron, but he hasn't received anything yet. Hebrews 11:39. He has not gotten the promise. But in faith, he's sitting in that grave for the last 3,800 years or so. And he's waiting for the resurrection, and it's as sure as the day as he went in there. But now we have to have the same faith he had. We have to look, and that's why I love going to Beersheba, where he dug that well, because that's the beginning of the covenant. I love going to Hebron, where his very bones are there. Boy, if it doesn't get more real than that, seeing the bones of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that have been preserved for 3,800 years. The promise is sure. Do you believe it? Do you believe it? You know? Do you believe it? Because belief is action. That's what we say. You know? Deeds are the evidence of your faith. And like I said, if all of a sudden smoke was coming up behind me and fire, you'd be saying, Don, there's fire, and we'd all be running for the door, right? Because you'd believe it. So do we believe that the kingdom of Yahweh is coming? Do we believe in his promises? Do we believe these things? Because if we do, we are not going to build a life in Babylon. When I say Babylon in this sense, I'm talking about the whole world. A life in sane system. We're not going to do it. We can enjoy our life, we can enjoy our family, we can bless people, but we're not going to make our foundation in Satan society. We're looking for something better. We're looking for a kingdom that has no end to it, like the kingdom that's here. And that's the lesson that he says here. That's the lesson what he's showing us by the cloud moving. And like I said, if you're building a life in Satan's world, you'll never see when the cloud moves. And I'll tell you something, you know. Years ago, when I was a young person, I worked in the stock market. And if you look overall in investments in the United States, there has been no greater investment over the last, you know, 100 years than just putting your money in the stock market. It always goes up. Yet 90% of people lose their money. How could that be? How could an investment that only goes up over 100 years, can 90% of the people lose their money? Because people put their money in after the stock rises, and they drag their money out as it's falling, and they panic. They don't know when to buy, and they don't know when to sell. They don't see the cloud moving. They don't have any insight. They don't have discernment. And this is the same thing here. If you don't have discernment in your life, and you don't know when that cloud is moving, look out. You're going to be in trouble. Because you're constantly going to be getting in trouble. You're going to stay in places too long. You're going to go to the wrong places. You're going to leave too early. You're going to get the wrong jobs. Because you're not following the cloud. You're following your heart, or you're following your lust, whatever it might be. And that in itself can make your life miserable. And then people are blaming Yahweh. Well, how can Yahweh allow this to happen? Well, how can he allow this to happen? Well, look at the circumstances. And you find out, it's not that Yahweh allowed this to happen. This is cause and effect. This person was doing this thing wrong. This person was doing that wrong. He wasn't following Yahweh, and he's paying the consequences of his decisions. So you have to. But if you're in constant daily connection with Yahweh, if you're praying to him daily, you're fasting regularly, you're reading your Bible, you're asking him for everything, you're listening to his voice, you're not going to miss the cloud. You've got to follow the cloud. Because you want to know something. The cloud is already moved. The cloud is moved. The people of Yahweh are feeling his spirit. Things are happening all over the world. Miracles are even happening. Healings I'm hearing in places. And if we're not feeling it, something's wrong. We want to get involved in it. We got to change our life then. We may have to change the direction. Maybe we're not sanctified enough. Maybe we're not praying enough. Or maybe we're not just listening for that small, still voice. Right? Remember Eliyahu. The voice was not in the fire. The voice was not in the earthquake. The voice was in that small, still voice. And in order to have that, you have to have quiet. You can't have clutter in your life. I know sometimes when I go to the States, we do meetings in hotels. You know, we have no other choice. And I love seeing the brethren, but what I can't stand about it is, you go to this hotel, right? And in the lobby where you're having your breakfast, or maybe where you have to walk through to go to the meeting hall, they always have this TV blasting. And, you know, I'll come down and I'll flick it off, and I might be the only one there with one other brother or sister, and they're turning it back on. And I'll say, can you turn that off, please? I don't want to hear that. Or loud music blasting. There's so much clutter that's coming, you can't hear that small, still voice. And you may miss the cloud. You've got to be able to discern the voice of Yahweh, and you don't want to miss the cloud when it's moving. So again, we have to get complete reliance on Yahweh. We have to know when the cloud is moving. You have to know where to live, who to fellowship with, what to work, servitude. You have to lay it all on the altar of Yahweh. Numbers 13. And verse 1 says, "And Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, Send men for you, and they shall spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the sons of Israel. You shall send one man for the tribe of his fathers, one man, every one a leader among them. And by the command of Yahweh, Moses sent them from the wilderness of Paran, and they were all these men heads of the sons of Israel." Then he goes in, names all these men, right? So here it is. We look at these people, and they're all going out, and Yahweh's saying, you went along enough in this wilderness. I'm going to send you out there. Go to the promised land now. And he's picking not just anybody. They're not just picking by lots. They're picking the leaders of each tribe to go out and represent and to go into the promised land to spy out the land. And what happens? They go out with confidence and they come back with fear. They go out with confidence, come back with fear. You don't know how many people I've talked to where I'll give a message and they'll come up after that message and they'll say, "Wow, that message was great. Thank you so much for that message. That helped me so much." And then all of a sudden I find out 1 month, 2 months, 3 months later how they fell away and they did this thing. And then the next year you meet them again and they're saying the same thing. "Well, thank you again for that message. That really inspired me." This isn't a pep talk. It's not a pep talk. You know, this is something that has to be life-changing. It's something that you have to work on. And yes, I'm here to encourage you, but if you don't take action with it, if it's only a momentary feeling of inspiration that's going to walk away the minute you walk out of that door, then this is meaningless. The words I'm telling you are life and death. And the spirit that's in each of us is able to change us, but you have to surrender to that spirit and allow it to happen. And that means every day of your life you're going to have to work on it. You know? We're not Sabbath Christians. We're 7 day a week believers, which means 7 day a week we have to live this way. 7 days a week, not just when we come and meet with each other. 7 days a week we have to sanctify us from the world. 7 days a week we have to be obedient. We have to be reading the Torah. You know, the Essenes said, every night of the year, for a third of the night, they studied the Torah. Third of the night, every night of the year. We have to become masters at this. And how do you become a master? You become a master by mastering the basics. And that's why I say we start a new congregation. You know how we do it? We send leaders down there and we go over the 23 lessons for not a week, not a month, not even a year, for 2-3 years. Only the 23 lessons. Because every single brother and sister in that congregation, they should know those lessons in and out. It should be where you don't even need your Bible, where somebody's asking you a question about the Holy Spirit, about the family of Yahweh, about the Sabbath day, that boom, you can go to it. Now, if your memory isn't good, there's ways we can do it. Only remember one scripture. And where the first scripture is, put another scripture. And where the second scripture is, put another scripture. So if your memory isn't good, there's ways to help with it. But the point is, you have to master it. You can't become a son of Elohim unless you learn the family business. And the family business is this book. The family business is this doctrine. And this is what we'll be teaching. Our main job in the kingdom is going to be education. Education to the Torah, education on proper living, education on agriculture, education on clean water, education on sanitary things. Because the world is going to be in chaos by the time Yeshua returns. And that's why I say, you know, we need to be looking toward this. We need to be educating ourselves in the things that we're going to be using very shortly. And if something isn't going to be in the kingdom, I say, if you were going to school to be an eye doctor, and that's a great profession, nothing wrong with being an eye doctor, because now we need it. But if you knew for sure, absolutely, that they came up with something that nobody would need glasses in the next year, they're just finalizing it. And there'll be something that they can put in your eye drops and everybody would see perfectly. Would you still waste your time going to be an eye doctor? What would be the purpose? There'd be no purpose. Nobody needs it anymore. So that's what I say. Everybody's got to work, right? But you could just as easily work towards something that's going to be helping people than working some dead-end job that's doing nothing but getting you a few dollars, you know, to temporarily hold off your next rent check. We want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Many are called, few are chosen. So here it is. They leave with zeal. They come back with fear. They leave in confidence. They come back with fear. Drop down to verse 25. And they returned from spying out the land at the end of 40 days. You know, when I say 40 is the number of trial or the number of overcoming. It's depending how you look at it. You know, the number of trial overcoming. Because 40 years in the wilderness, they come into the promised land. You know, 40 days of fasting, but then the fast is over. So it's depending. And you know, I always looked at it as 40 being the number of trial until I hit 40. On my 40th year, that's when I realized, hey, this is overcoming. This isn't trial. And I need to overcome now. But it really is. So, verse 25, they return from spying out the land at the end of 40 days. And they went and came in to Moses and Aaron and all the company of the congregation of the sons of Israel to the wilderness of Paran to Kadesh. And they brought all the congregation word and made them see the fruit of the land. And they reported to him and said, oh yeah, we came to the land where you sent us. And yes, indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. You know, they have this gigantic two people carrying the grapes. But the people that live in the land are fierce, and the cities are walled up very great. And also we have seen the children of Anak, the giants there. Amalek lives in the land of Negev, and the Hittite, and the Jebusite, and the Amorite live in the hills. And the Canaanite is living in the sea beside the Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, we will certainly go up and we will seize it, for we are well able to do it. And the men who had gone up with him said, we are not able to go against these people, for it is stronger than we. And they sent out an evil report of the land which they spied out to the sons of Israel, saying, the land into which we passed to spy it out is a land eating up the ones living in it. And the people we saw in the midst were men of stature. And we saw giants there, the sons of Anak, of the giants. And we were in our own eyes as grasshoppers. And so we were in all their eyes. Just a little bit of exaggeration, right? Maybe they were giants, but even if they were 9 feet tall, they couldn't have looked as grasshoppers. They weren't 50 feet tall, you know, ready to step on them. But you can see, they left in confidence, they return in fear. And we don't want that. We don't want that. Like I said, yes, when we get together at feast times, when we get together on the Sabbath, we are there to encourage each other. But that encouragement can't last just a few hours. The Spirit of Yahweh, you have to build that faith that you're going to be constant in this. Now we use fear, we use the acronym, false evidence appearing real. Because you want to know something, 90% of people's fears never come about. You know? And fear, like it says, fear brings torment, but which gets rid of fear? Perfect love. Because wherever there's fear, there's selfishness involved. There's selfishness. You're thinking of yourself. You're afraid of what's going to happen to yourself. And that brings fear. But perfect love casts out fear. Why? Because perfect love is caring for others. It's caring for Yahweh. It's getting your mind off yourself. So that's the key here. The key to this lesson. What report do we give? Is the land good? Or is it filled with giants? What are you going to tell the people when you go back? Is the land good? Or is it filled with giants? So, I just want to briefly, I don't want to go too much over time, but I just want to briefly go over a little bit of the trips we took the last couple of years. Because about maybe three and a half years ago, Yahweh inspired me to put a trip together walking in the footsteps of the Israelites. As we were getting closer to the end, I said to myself, you know, as I'm studying this and Yahweh's inspiring it, that I'm reading Corinthians 10, he's saying all these things are examples for us. I'm saying, yeah, but we're in the promised land here. We're in after the wilderness. What are the examples? We need to go there. We need to see it. So we took several trips and we went to the other side. And praise Yahweh for my friend Yossi, the archaeologist, because like I said, he's not a believer in Yeshua, but he does love the Bible. And without him, I could have never did this trip. Because they're not named. That all the stops of Israelites are not named there in Jordan, but he knows the names of them. He knows the biblical names because of 30 years ago when Israel was allowed to go there and mark all these places of archaeology. So even the tour guides and even the heads of these tour companies in Jordan, none of them knew any of these places. We're going way out in the wilderness. We're taking dune buggy rides. But we're going to the real places. We're going to Mount Nebo, you know, where Moses wasn't allowed to enter the promised land. And why wasn't he allowed to enter the promised land? Because Moses defiled Yahweh. You know, remember, some Bibles put Moses was the humblest of every man, but look that word up. The word is not humble. The word literally means bowed down. And the word should be Moses was depressed among all men. And I don't doubt Moses could have been somewhat humble, but look at a lot of his actions. Getting angry and screaming and slamming a rock doesn't sound too humble to me. screaming and yelling and throwing down the Ten Commandment plaques and breaking them. That doesn't sound too humble to me. Now, granted, it might be righteous anger. I'm not saying it was wrong. But what I'm saying is, when you look at his actions and you look at the meaning of that word, depressed fits much better. Because when does that come up? When even his brother and sister are coming against him. And how many times did Moses from the beginning say, I don't want this job. Pick somebody else. And now even his confidant, his brother, own brother and sister are turning on him. And it says he was depressed. But you know what happens? You can't have a spirit of appreciation and a spirit of depression at the same time. It's got to be one or the other. Like I said, we do this at the school. I have all the students. Let's try it. Everybody smile. Smile. Keep smiling. Smile. Come on, Ellen. Let's get that smile. Petra, smile there. Now smile. Now be depressed. Come on, smile and be depressed. You can't do it. You can't do it because your nervous system, when you're depressed, what do you like? You know, the mouth goes down, the face goes down. When you're happy and you're smiling, and that's why your physiology means so much, that a lot of times, if you're not feeling so good, all you have to do is change your movements. And just changing your physiology sometimes can send a message to your nervous system is, hey, don't act like that. You're not supposed to be depressed. You're supposed to be happy because your lips are up. And it could be as simple as that. So Moses focused on the bad things. And I'm not saying he didn't have reason to, because there were a lot of bad things going on there. But what I'm saying, the lesson that we have to learn is, because Moses, through his depression, was not allowed to enter the promised land. The very leader of all these people, the very one that Yahweh said, I speak to face to face, was not allowed to take the people into the promised land because he didn't give the glory to Yahweh. And when you read the story, you almost figure, well, the people being rebellious, okay, I know he hit the rock, but it almost like you don't get it until you understand it's not just what he did, it's his emotion behind it. That Moses was a depressed man, he's feeling sorry for himself, he's not giving glory to Yahweh, and now Yahweh says, feed the people, hit the rock, and what does he do? He smacks the thing twice, or speak to the rock, he smacks it twice and says, you rebels, you know, take this water. So, is that going to give glory to Yahweh as the water is gushing out of the rock? No. No. And it's also an analogy of the first covenant to the second covenant. Because remember, my rod and my staff, they comfort you. And the rod is like the first covenant. It's like the Torah. The rod is where you swack, you know, you smack. Even sheep get hit with the rod to keep them safe. But the staff, you gently guide and lead with. So Yahweh had in his mind an analogy. The first time I'll have them hit the rock, like the rod, but the second time I'll have them talk to the rock, like the new covenant, like my staff. And Moses blew the analogy. He blew the analogy, the people didn't give the credit to Yahweh, and he paid for it. So we want to learn from that. We want to make sure that we have a spirit of appreciation for everything. Because, you know, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. That's why I was saying, when I look at my childhood, I only have good memories. Because I had good family, I had good cousins, I played sport, I had everything good. Now, there was a lot of bad things that happened in my childhood. I'm just not thinking on them. Because overall, my memory is a good memory. And that's what happens as time goes on. You either remember everything bad or remember everything good, depending on what your association was to that. And if we're living in a constant spirit of appreciation, we're only going to be praising Yahweh 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's what we want to learn from. That if Moses could not go into the promised land, then wow. So it could happen to us. So we want to stay in that constant spirit of appreciation. On the other side, last year we also went down to the valley where Moses was buried. And the good part was, you wouldn't believe it, because the land around it is barren, but where Moses is buried, it's all plush, and there's a river. It's a beautiful area down there. And it made us realize that, wow, you know something? Moses may have lost out on a physical position of not being able to take people in the promised land, but he didn't lose out on his eternal inheritance. You know, he'll be in the kingdom. You know, so sometimes we make mistakes, and we lose something here in this world, but Yahweh is a redeemer, and we don't have to lose our salvation. You know, there's always repentance with Yahweh, and he's always has that handout for that. Lot's cave is another situation we went through. I don't want to read the story. We read it many times. Maybe I'll just read the beginning of it. In Genesis 19. Genesis 19. I'll start in verse 14. And Lot went out to speak to his son-in-laws. This is after the cherubs come and they tell him, you've got to get out of here. The place is going to be destroyed. And Lot went out to speak to his son-in-laws, those taking his daughters. And he said, rise up, go out from this place, for Yahweh is about to destroy the city. And he seemed as one joking to his son-in-laws. And when the dawn rose, then cherubs urged Lot, saying, rise up, take your wife and your two daughters who are found, lest you be consumed in the perversity of the city. And he lingered. And the men laid hold of his hand and his wife's hand and on the hand of his two daughters, Yahweh having mercy on him, and caused them to go out, and they put him outside the city. And it happened as they led him outside to escape, he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you, and do not stay in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be swept away. So here it is, right? A righteous man, Lot, but he's lingering. You know, like we said, the invitations are out. Things are moving ahead. The kingdom of Yahweh is at the horizon. Are we lingering? Are we lingering with making these decisions? Are we holding back with our plan of action? Are we really doing what Yahweh supposes of us? Or are we lingering as Sodom and Gomorrah or Babylon is ready to burn? We don't want to linger. Because when you linger, what happens? You know, you fall behind. It's like anything else. If you had a test to do in school or a report to do in school, and you had 1 week to do that report, right? If you do it the first day and it's over with, wow. Now you have 6 days so you can feel at peace and you can do other things. But if you wait to the last night and you only have a few hours before you have to get up and go to that class, there's going to be a lot of pressure on you. There'll be a lot of pressure that happens there. Lingering really, really holds you back. I always say with Babylon, there's three plans. There's the Abraham plan, there's the Israelite plan, and then there's the Lot plan. So, you know, every plan, you pay for what you're getting. So Abraham is the best plan. Abraham, get up and go. Abraham goes. He gets to bring his family. He gets to bring his servants. He gets to bring all his money. He gets to bring everything, right? That's the Abraham plan. That's the best plan, if you can. Then you have the Israelite plan. Not as good as the Abraham plan. You know, they had to leave without letting their dough rise, right? But they did get to pilfer the Egyptians, and they got to go with some things. So it's not the worst plan. Not the best, but not the worst. What you don't want to get involved with is the Lot plan. The Lot plan is the bad one. It's like, leave now or die, you know, with the shirt on your back. So our life is like that. That's what I'm saying. Not even necessarily of fleeing Babylon, but I'm saying watching the cloud go. You know that if you follow the cloud as soon as it's moving, you're working in the Abraham plan. Because everything's going to fall in line. But if you're not following the cloud, you're going to have problems in your life. And if you're lingering, because sometimes what will happen is, remember, Yahweh has mercy, like here, that you'll linger because maybe you didn't see it, and he'll give you little signs to know. You know, I always, before we've had moves, Petra can tell you, I always said, you know, Yahweh told me, Petra, get ready. We're going to be leaving soon. I don't know, but maybe 6 months, 8 months, and almost to the month, it'll happen. And not that we chose it. Things will happen, like the landlord will come and say, you know, your rent is, we want the house, or your visa, and whatever it is, something will happen to force us to do it. But because Yahweh told me, I prepared it. So then when the time came up, we weren't panicking. We were all ready. We had a bags pack. We're just ready for the time to go. So Yahweh is merciful that if you don't see the first sign, he'll send you little signs, but you have to be looking for them, and you have to be praying. Because like I said, when you're on the Lot plan, you're in trouble. Now you're fleeing for your life and you can't think right. And then look what happens. Verse 24. Yahweh on earth rained fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah from Yahweh out of the heavens. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and those living in the cities and the produce of the ground. And his wife looked back with pleasure from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Wow. Remember what he said. The other thing is, don't look back. Don't look back. What does the Apostle Paul say? This one thing I do, looking ahead. I don't look at the things behind, I look ahead. And many times people will be limiting Yahweh and limiting themselves because they'll say, I can't do this. Well, why can't you do this? Because 7 years ago this happened. Because 12 years ago this happened. Because when I was in high school, the teacher said this to me. And it's like, don't look behind, look ahead. I can do all things through Messiah giving me the strength. I can do all things through the Messiah giving me the strength. So we don't want to look behind. Behind is behind. And that means if somebody hurts you, right? Because what happens? Maybe somebody hurt you. Maybe somebody even borrowed money from you and never paid it back. And then, I'll never lend money again to anybody. You know what that does? That limits you to be able to give. That limits you to be able to bless. You know how many times I lent money to people? You know how many times that I let somebody come to the feast without paying and said, pay me later, and they never paid me a penny? They never paid it back? Now, I never ever let it stop me from helping somebody else, because who am I hurting? I'm hurting myself and I'm hurting that other person. And why should I penalize the next person who didn't hurt me because of what somebody else did? The past does not equal the future. It's got to be one of your beliefs. The past does not equal the future. So don't limit yourself. Don't look back. Don't use excuses. Reframe it. Reframe it. You got to be able to reframe it. At the school one time, there was when I'm asking people their empowering beliefs and disempowering beliefs, and somebody said, well, my disempowering belief is I don't trust people. And I said, but all you have to do is reframe that. Because actually, that's a good, you don't want to just trust anybody. Reframe it to say, I will make people earn my trust. That's much better, right? Instead of saying, I don't trust people, which makes you suspicious of everybody, to simply change that belief in your mind to say, I will make people earn my trust. Now, what does that do? It stops you from being taken advantage of. And now, when people earn your trust, they're real friends. And now you can give real trust. So again, this is why Yahweh is saying, don't look back. You know, you've been baptized. You come out of that water, right? There's the horizon up here. The Garden of Eden is before us. There's a burnt wilderness behind. We don't want to look back to that burnt wilderness. We want to be looking ahead. You want to be looking ahead because every day of your life is a new day in Yahweh, and He has something else to move you forward to the kingdom. And that's part of the wilderness. You want to know something? If you look in the Bible, you'll find out 7 is the number of completion, right? So what would be completion of completion? 7 sevens. 49. If you read the stops in Numbers 33, you'll find out there was 42 stops in the wilderness. So in that 40 years, 42 times they moved. What does that tell you? There's 1 seven left. You know, we know this in the end days. There's 1 seven. There's 1 week from the Daniel prophecy that's left. There's 1 seven left, which means there's 7 more stops. Which means sometimes, like somebody will say, well, I want to do this, but I don't know. I say, don't worry about it. Get in the wilderness. You know, like they say, come in the water. You got to get wet. You got to get in the wilderness to go to stop 2 and stop 3. If you don't go to stop 1, you know, to even stop 1, you'll never get to stop 2. You have to enter the wilderness. You have to enter the wilderness. And then Yahweh will take you from stop to stop. And remember, the last stop is the kingdom. But if you don't get to stop 1, you're not going to get to stop 7. So we don't want to linger. We need not only to believe, but we need conviction. When people ask me, do you believe in the Sabbath? I don't say anymore, yes, I believe in the Sabbath. I say, I keep the Sabbath. Because the demons believe, but they don't keep it. So it's not a matter of belief, it's a matter of conviction. It's a matter of doing, you know? It's a matter of doing it. Last scripture I want to go in here is Song of Solomon, 2nd chapter, verse 8 and 9. Because it's the bride coming out of the wilderness. Song of Solomon 2, 8 and 9, then I'm going to drop down to 13. The voice of my beloved, behold, he comes leaping on the mountains, skipping on the hills. My beloved is likened to a gazelle, or a young deer, the stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall, looking from the windows, peering from the lattice. Drop down to verse 13. The fig tree spices her unripe figs, and the vines give a fragrance by the blossom. Arrive, my love, come, my beautiful one, and come yourself. O, my dove, in the clefts of the rocks, in the secrecy of the steep place, let me see your form, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet, and your form is beautiful. We actually went to the biblical Selah, the literal rock in the wilderness that's there, amazing place, about 1,000 steps to the top. We didn't go to the top. It's very dangerous. You can do it, but it'll take time. It's dangerous. But we've been there. We've been to the big biblical Selah, like it says. The rock in the wilderness where Yahweh protects and hides his people. And where does the bride come from? The bride comes out of the wilderness. So here it is. It's really interesting. The Song of Solomon is a great book. I think in the near future I'm going to do a Bible study on the book, because it's not many chapters, and it's an unbelievable book of Yeshua's love toward his bride and the love that the bride gets back toward the bridegroom. And it shows you that the bride goes into the wilderness impure and not ready, but she comes out ready and white. But you got to enter the wilderness. You got to enter the wilderness. So, like we said, we look at the examples of the children of Israel, 2-point-something million people that entered the wilderness, and only Joshua and Caleb, two of them, entered the promised land, 20 and above. And why? Because it says Joshua and Caleb had another spirit. They had another spirit, and we want to be that way. We don't want the spirit of the world. We want to have another spirit. We want to have the spirit of Yahweh. We want to have the spirit of love, joy, peace, patience, long-suffering, right? The 9 fruits of the spirit, faith. We want to have that spirit. That's the spirit that we want to have. That's the spirit we want Yahweh to grow with. And that's the spirit we want to take into the wilderness. And that's the spirit we want to grow coming out of the wilderness. So I pray that whoever has not entered the wilderness will enter the wilderness, and I pray for those in the wilderness that you're watching the cloud, because it moved. It's time to go to the next stop. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.